Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our Learning Ashare. Just a calendar announcement. Next week is our last week before Pesach, Be'ezrat Hashem, the Wednesday night before Yom Tov, which is like 2 days before Chag. Okay, no Shir. I didn't think anyone expected there to be Shir that night, but just as a heads up, Shara, we will send out the Shul reminder, and I will also post the reminder. So next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, Mishal Biwal, is our last Shir before Yom Tov. And then we resume if Mashiach does not come, and things do not change, and we're all back here after Yom Tov, then we resume the Wednesday night. Pesach is over like Motzei Shabbos, I think, so we resume the Wednesday night, Mirtz Hashem, we should all be wow, after Yom Tov. Okay, so there is Shir still next week, Mirtz Hashem. We are learning the Zecher Nishmasa and the Yilui Nishmasa, Miriam Fron, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzchak, Allah HaShalom. May the Neshama have a continuous Aliyah Neschos of our Divrei Torah this evening, and we also, of course, thank the Fron family very much for their commitment to the Harbatzos HaTorah, the Zecher Nishmas, their mother, Allah HaShalom. So we are talking about the purity of the neshama. And last time we spoke about Elokai Neshama, that my God, the soul you have placed within me is pure, you created it, you fashioned it, etc. We are on page 256. I hope it gave people some insight when they daven Berkas HaShachar this week. Since we learned last week, if it gave some people some insight into a deeper meaning behind what we are thanking God for and the purity of our soul. Okay, so I'm just going to start from the top of page 256, just to give us some frame of reference where we are, but I'm not going to repeat what we said last time. Okay? One will not think about something that does not interest him. So if you think about something, it means it interests you. Sometimes the ratzon, the desire, is strong and apparent, and sometimes it is in the subconscious. But if there's no ratzon at all, one will not think about it. You know, when he says subconscious, you know, sometimes you dream about something and you weren't thinking about it at all during the day, maybe it doesn't happen to you, but it comes out in your dream and you realize that it's really something that's on your mind. So in some level, in some place within your psyche, you are thinking about it. But if there's no ratzon at all, it's not even on your webpage, so to speak, then you're not paying attention at all. You're not even thinking about it. You might see a thing, but you won't pay attention. Only if what he sees corresponds to some inner ratzon, some inner desire, will he pay attention. I was reading a mishpacha this past Shabbos. I don't know if you saw, there was a special supplement to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zecher Tzaddik Kodesh Levracha, so I didn't have time to read it over Shabbos at all, but slowly during the week, as I eat my lunch, so I'm going through it. So I just read a story yesterday, today, trying to refine it, but it was just two lines in the whole supplement, so I don't remember which page it was on. So they came to Rav Chaim before. Someone was concerned. They said, apparently concerned about making extra saliva. I don't know if it's halach or why you want to be allowed to eat it. They asked him, are you allowed to eat chumas and tachina on Erev Yom Kippur? So Rav Chaim replied, he doesn't know what that is. What is chumas and tachina? So, and it's said, I saw it brought down a few places, that after he finished eating, he would need to ask what he ate so he should know what bracha achrona to make, on what to recite upon what he just ate. Because there's no ratzon for physical taiva food. We want it to taste good. And Rav Steinman, Zecher Tzaddik Kodesh Levracha, you see like cold porridge and a boiled potato. We're totally not those, it's not even something that I think ever in my life I will aspire to or will be or in that such a place. But the point is that if you see something, you pay attention to it, you have a ratzon, a desire for it, then you're thinking about it. If you have no desire for it, it's not even on your plane. The soul has faculties of thinking, contemplating, loving, fearing, hating. So we think, we contemplate, we love, we fear, we hate. But where does it all come from? Does a person naturally desire to do good, except that there's an external force that convinces you to do evil? So naturally you desire to do good, but there's an outside force that wants you to do evil. Or does the soul really desire evil, and there's an external force pushing you to do good? Which is why we spoke, that was the point of departure for last week's shir, about the Alokai Neshama Shanasatabi Tohorahi. My God, the soul you placed in me is a pure soul, which leads us to understand that the Neshama is never tainted from sin. The Neshama is absolutely pure, and there's an external force that pushes us to do evil. So really, if it was up to the person, the neshama of the person, you would always do good. The neshama does not desire to be evil, but it is the external force of evil that pushes us to acts in ways contrary to the purity of the soul. For example, okay, middle of page 256, if one has a son, the son may have certain interests, okay? So today you might have children, they might be interested in sports, and you're not interested in sports in any way, shape, or form. The children today have certain interests. The father will try to interest him in other endeavors. So the father will try and get him involved in, or used to, or interested in other things. The boy may want to play, and the father will convince him to learn Torah. Right? So maybe the boy wants to do something else. The father says, let's learn Torah. If the son would have no interest whatsoever in learning, okay, there's absolutely no ratzon for Torah learning, the father cannot convince him, because that would be a yesh me'ayin, says the Mechaber. What's a yesh me'ayin? We cannot create yesh me'ayin. Only the Ribbono Shel Olam can create yesh me'ayin. What's yesh me'ayin? Yesh me'ayin is something from nothing. So only God could create something from nothing, except that Rav Soloveitchik says it's really a misnomer. That's actually not correct. God created something from something. That's something being himself. But since we can't conceptualize of what that means, so we say that the world was created, ayesh me'ayin, there was nothing, and then Hashem spoke, and then he created the whole world. But a father cannot do that. No human being can create something from nothing. Right? And it's very easy to understand this. When you make a soup, you didn't make something from nothing. You used raw ingredients and you made a soup. When you bake a cake, you didn't make something from nothing. Even the creation of a human being is not something from nothing. It's something from something. The male contributes, the female contributes. There's two very small cells, but it's something. We cannot create something from nothing. We are fashioners who fashion yesh meyesh. The Ribbono Shel Olam is a creator who creates yesh me'ayin. There's a very different, very big difference between a bore, a creator, and a yotzer, a fashioner. A fashioner uses existing raw material to fashion something new. A creator can take nothing and create something totally new, which is why we say that the bore, briyas olam, what do we call creation? Briyat olam, briyas olam. Hashem, there was nothing. There was tohu v'vohu, there was choshech al panei tohom. The only thing that there was ruach elokim rachafas al panei amayim. God spoke from nothing and he created something. By the way, that helps you understand the two times that man was created. The first time man was created in Parak Aleph, Pasuk Chof Zayin, Vayivra elokim esa adam betzalmo, betzalim elokim bara oso, zachar nekeva bara osam. What shorish was used? A verb that I just said it. Vayivra. What's vayivra?
Creation.
God created. So listen, vayivra Elohim esa Adam. God Elohim created Adam. Bitsalmo in his image. Bitsalim Elohim bara oso. In the image of God, he created him. There's the word again. Two times. Zachar nekeva bara oso. Three times. So Hashem created. He was a bore. So there was nothing. There was no human being. Yeah, we didn't come from birds, and we didn't come from fish, and we didn't come from anemones, and we didn't come from apes. We came from nothing. Hashem created from nothing. Now that first form was Zachar and Nekeva together. But we know today when you look at the world, we're not Zachar and Nekeva together. We're Nekeva and they're Zachar, and we're separate beings. So now, for whatever reason, the Ribbono Shel Olam needed Kaviyachol to separate those two into two distinct beings. In the beginning, it was Zachar and Nekeva bara osam. So what does it say when Hashem created Adam in Bereishis Perek Beis Pasuk Zayin? Vayitzer Hashem Elokim Esa Adam. Why is that significant? Because what does it mean? Yeah, you're smiling. So what does that mean?
He took what was already there.
Oh, he took the raw material that he created in the end of Paragav Pasuk of Zion. For whatever reason, in his infinite, unfathomable, unrelatable wisdom, God decided that the first creation could not sustain, because this world is not Zachar and Nekeva together. We're not walking around Siamese twins, half of us male, half of us female. We are two separate entities. But that was Vayivra. But now he already had the raw material of Adam. So what does he do now? He fashions from that bria, from that creation, he fashions man alone. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim. You have to be so medactic when you learn the Chumash. Every word tells you a whole story and an entire lesson. The first time it's a borei because there was nothing. Not that we descended from apes. There was no human being. And Hashem created man from nothing. But then God decided in his infinite wisdom, the way I created is not the enduring way of humanity. So then Vayitzer, Hashem took that raw material that he had created, which was the original form of a human being. He refashioned it into a Zachar. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim Esa Adam, Afra Min Adama, Vayipach Ba'ap of Nishmas Chayim, talking about the soul. Okay? We are talking all about the soul. Hashem blew into his nostrils the soul of life. Someone told me today at the Nahalas, a very elderly gentleman, because the age population at the Nahalas is very elderly, I'm being serious. He's in his mid-90s, mid to upper 90s. Is this true? I quoted that pasuk because I was talking about Parshas Tezriah, which is all about speech, and Vaspa Adam L'Ruach Memala. So Targum Unko says, at the moment of creation, man became a speaking spirit. So I was saying in English, he and God Elohim, I didn't talk about this whole Borei Yotzer thing at the Nahalas. I was just talking about the power of speech. So God Elohim fashioned man, dust from the earth, and he blew into his nostrils the soul of life. So he told me, that's when a person sees you, sneezes, you say, God bless you. Yes? Because they used to think that the soul went into man through his nostrils. Not they used to think, that's what the Torah says. So therefore, you shouldn't like sneeze out your soul. It sounds a little funny, but
I thought that was actually, I think I remember learning that that's how people die before Adam, before Abraham died for daven for there to be a sickness, so that people
Yaakov daven for sickness.
Daven for sickness. It used to be a sneeze. That's what I thought it was.
Oh, so the soul went into the nostrils. So he told me that's why you say God bless you when a person sneezes. So Gesundheit, which I said was very interesting, because when Nadav and Avihu died in Parsha Shmini the week before, what does Rashi say? I think it's Parak Yud Pasuk Hey or Vav. Rashi there says two threads of fire entered their nostrils and destroyed their neshama. So you see that the nostrils are the gateway to the neshama, interestingly. So that's just an aside. So he told me that's why you say God bless you, which I thought was very interesting. But Lamaisa, only Hashem could, as we have seen from the Psukim, create something from nothing. Even though Soloveitchik says it's really something from something, the something being God. But Lamaisa, he creates something from nothing. We cannot do that. It doesn't matter what you sculpt, a sculpture, you create a baby, whatever it is. It's coming from raw material, and you fashion it. Okay, so going back to the Sefer, if the son would have no interest whatsoever in learning, the father could not convince him, because that would be creation of nothing. And no person can accomplish such a feat. A human being cannot make a yesh me'ayin, as we have just explained and illustrated from the Psukim in the Torah. The child certainly is both a ratzon for learning, so this child has a desire for learning, but he also has a desire for playing. But he feels the ratzon for playing much more strongly. So the desire to play games is more strong than the desire to learn Torah. The ratzon for learning seems like an external heavenly voice telling he should learn Torah. But lamaisa, what happens? The ratzon to learn pushes that heavenly voice away. It seems so far removed. It's something I don't have interest in, and he has no interest in that area. And the ratzon, the desire to play, pushes it far, far away. This reminds me of a story. There's someone in the chat. Malki Sultan says what you just said, Shani. People died when they sneezed. Is that like a source for that?
I just Googled it.
Say it louder for me, please.
I just Googled it, and because it's not just a Jewish thing. It's everybody says bless you.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not just a Jewish thing, apparently. Like, yeah. No, you're
it's
all
like
saying
it's actually highly offensive if someone sneezes.
If you don't
and
say,
you
bless you.
Bless you.
And not
like,
necessarily God,
you're like
bless
considered
you.
Rude. Like,
yeah.
You don't say bless you.
So they said it's because.
And what did it say on Google? It's a true thing?
Yeah. I mean, it's all different cultures because a lot of some people just saw it as a bad omen. They thought that it was part of, you might. Whether the beginning, showing your symptom of the plague or
that's
something.
So
that's
so interesting. But I must go back to Bereishis, Perek Beis, Pasuk Zayin, Vayipach Ba'ap of Nishmas Chayim.
Yeah,
if everyone holds of the Bible and the Old Testament and the soul goes in through the nostrils, then maybe they thought it came out through the nostrils.
Correct. So it's all...
Very interesting.
Some have good...
Okay. So there's your source for Gesundheit, or God bless you. Okay. So, again, I don't know if medically this is true or not true. I have no idea. No, it's not medically
all
true.
All I know is that you can do CPR through the nose, so you can give oxygen.
Okay, so the ratzon, so we're talking about this ratzon. So there's this child who wants to play, and the father wants him to learn. So the kasha is, where's his ratzon? Does he have a ratzon only does he have a ratzon for learning, but the ratzon to play pushes away the ratzon for learning? Or does he have a ratzon to play, but the ratzon for learning is stronger? This reminded me of a story of Rav Aaron Leibstein in Zecher Tzadva Kodesh Levracha. I could not find it in my book. When I was preparing Shir, I went to look up in the Rav Aaron Leib biography, because I take notes and I read, so I should remember all the stories there, and I couldn't find it. So I Googled it. You could Google sneezing, you could Google this also. I'm quoting from matzav.com, and it's a very famous story. It's somewhere in the book, but the book is hundreds of pages long, and I couldn't find it in my handwritten notes, so I don't know where it is in the book. Rav Shlomo Levinstein, a gabbai of Rav Aaron Leib Shtaymin, Zecher Tzadva Kodesh Levracha, recently spoke at a bar mitzvah of twin boys whose father was nifter over Pesach. Rav Levinstein related the following incident. A young man who lacked interest in Libud HaTorah went to Rav Shtaymin, and he asked him, would the Rav like steak or ice cream? Have you heard the story? It's famous. I heard a honey. And it reminds me of the story of Rav Chaim, or my Rauti Tchina or Chumas on Erev Pasach, and he said, I don't know what's Tchina, what's Chumas. He said, I don't even know what those things are. So someone went to Rav Shtaymin, and he said, would the Rav like steak or ice cream? So Rav Steinman, apparently not knowing what either of these items were, asked the young man what he meant. What are you asking me? The young man replied, these items are delicious food. Delicious foods. Rav Steinman replied, he doesn't want them. So I thought that this was a perfect illustration of this idea. What is our ratzon for? If the Mechaber says, if you see something and you desire it, it's because you have a ratzon for it. If you have an inner desire, only then will you pay attention to it, even if it's in the subconscious. You don't think about something that doesn't interest you. So Rav Steinman says, I don't want them. The man said, they're delicious foods. He says, I don't want them. The young man said to the senior Gadol Hadar, he's offering him foods that all people consider delicious and appetizing, yet Rav Steinman does not have any interest in them. If so, said the man, why was he here? I have no interest in learning Torah. I can feel that way even though everyone says Torah is sweet and enjoyable. Why must I learn Torah? So he was being a little chutzpahdik and he was drawing a parallel. You don't want steak or ice cream. You don't want honey even though everyone says it's delicious. Everyone says Torah learning is delicious. To me, Torah learning is not delicious. So why am I forced to learn Torah? It's a perfect illustration of what our author is talking about. Rav Steinman smiled at the young man and he said, if you give someone honey and they tell you it's bitter, it's not a problem with the honey. It's a problem with the person. That's exactly what I've got. If you give someone honey and they tell you it's bitter, it's not because the honey is bitter. It's not because the honey is bitter. It's because he has a problem in his mouth. It's not the honey that's lacking sweetness, explained Rav Steinman. It's the person's mouth. It's a person's defect, whatever it is, that's the cause of the bitterness. The same is true with learning Torah, said Rav Steinman. If someone does not desire to learn the sweetness of Torah, it's not because there's a problem with the Torah. It's because there's a problem with the person's ruts on themselves. So that's what the Mechaber is saying here. Yeah, so I know Yaakov Avinu was the first person to become ill before death. That's what I said. Avram Avinu asked for Zikna, Yitzchak Avinu asked for Yesurin, and Yaakov Avinu asked for Choli. So they come and they tell Yosef that your father is sick. Avram was the first one who asked for old age. Avram Zakein Bo Bayamim Vashem Berachas Avram Bakal. He was the Zakein. I just saw a cool Vadim Parsak Toshim. Pnei Seva Takum Vadarta Pnei Zakein. This is totally not related to Shir, but whatever, since you brought it up. It's beautiful. Parshas Kedoshim. So the Archaim says, Mipnei Seva Takum Vadarta Pnei Zakein. If you don't get up before the elder, you're not showing glory to the Zakein. Who's the Zakein? Based on what I'm talking about. Avram Zakein Bo Bayamim Vashem Berachas Avram Bakal. Avram is the Zakein. So if you lack respect for your elders, in a sense, you're lacking respect for Avram Avinu, the father of the Umma Yisraelis. Pnei Seva Takum, you must rise before an elderly person. The Hadarta Pnei Zakein, by rising for the elderly person, you're giving Hidur, you're giving honor and glory to Avram Avinu. So Lahefech, if you don't rise before an elderly person, it's beautiful. Parshas Kedoshim, we're coming up to actually after Pesach, so it's still in a few weeks, and you're not showing kavod to Avraham Avinu. Yes, but Malki is saying, according to the Medrash, people would sneeze and die. Malki, the Medrash says about the sneezing, or yeah? Oh, that's so cool. Could you email me that link, please? I'm trying to look up the Medrash in the original. Please email me the link. So according to Chabad.org, Yaakov Avinu was the first one to become ill. We know that. Before that, people would sneeze and die. Since Hashem blew man's soul into his nostrils, the soul would be returned to its maker through the same venue, which is through the nose. Very interesting. Thank you. Please email me the link. I'm going to try and look up the Medrash inside. Okay, so let's say the boy wants to play and the father wants to convince him to learn Torah. So he wants steak and ice cream, not at the same time. And the father says, Torah's sweet. One saying this is sweet, the other saying this is sweet. If the son has no interest whatsoever in learning Torah, then you can't create something out of nothing, and no person can accomplish such a feat. The child certainly is both a ratzon for learning, he desires to learn, and he desires to play, because what the author is saying is if you didn't have a desire to learn, you'll never come to learning. This is proof that every neshama is totally pure. How could someone who's so far removed from Torah come back to the Torah lifestyle? If you look at Chozer B'Teshuvah, okay, who is totally removed, who had no interest, who had no education. Why did they come back to a Torah lifestyle? It wasn't on their conscious level of thinking. It wasn't on their horizon at all. So it means that there must be something, even subconscious, which goes back to the fact that the soul is totally pure, that a person really always wants to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, even if they're not aware of it. Because if they didn't want that Ratzon, they didn't have that ratzon, it would be a something from nothing. And since we cannot create a something from nothing, it wouldn't matter how good Eisha Torah and Or Sameach were, you still couldn't convince people to learn Torah. Why? Because if they don't want it, you can't convince them, because it's a yesh me'ayin, something from nothing. We could only create something from something. So Or Sameach and Eisha Torah could be gewaldic, but the person still needs to have a ratzon, even if it's in the subconscious, for learning Torah. So that proves that the neshama is totally pure. Otherwise, the person couldn't come back to a Torah lifestyle. The child has both a ratzon for learning and for playing. The question is, which is stronger? But he feels the ratzon for playing much more strongly. The ratzon for learning seems like some kind of external heavenly voice that is telling him he should learn Torah, and the ratzon for playing is pushing it away. And translate Torah and playing with anything, doing a mitzvah and doing an aveira, speaking nicely and speaking lashon hara. This week's parsha is Tazria. Oneg and Nega are the same letters. Nega Tzaraas. Nega is the same letters of Oneg. It's not my own word. I just don't remember where I learned that. But Nega is an affliction of Tzaraas. So if you use your words wickedly, then it's, you bring upon yourself Nega Tzaraas, affliction of Tzaraas. If you use your words positively, then what do you bring? Oneg, which is delight and pleasure. Again, it's not my own word. Same letters. So if you mix them up, you have the same, it's dual aspects of a coin. So there's dual aspects to the person. There's the neshama's desire, and there's the guf desire. Which is stronger, and which wins out? So sometimes our neshama wins out, and sometimes the guf wins out. What does the father do? He takes those faint, very small glimmers of hope, positive thoughts in the child that tell the truth, but they've been pushed to the side, and he tries to magnify them, and he tries to expose them. So what does the father try and do? He tries to make a shayach, to bring out to the surface the desire of the child, which is really to learn Torah. You're cultivating what is already there. Gradually, the two desires become equal, and then the ratzon to learn becomes even stronger than the desire to play, and he agrees to learn. There is a principle of Chazal, which Rav Soloveitchik speaks about, but I couldn't find the essay either. I don't remember where it is. The principle of Chazal, Kofin Oso, Ad She'omer, very nice. Kofin Oso, Ad She'omer, Rotzani. What does it mean? If a person comes to give, if you're trying to force someone to give a get, and they don't want to give the get, Kofin Oso, and I'm not passing anything halacha, I have no idea at all about even the first nakuda of this. So if you're Chalila Bachas of Rashayach, you obviously consult us Torah. Don't take anything from here. But the principle is Kofin Oso Ad She'omer Rotze Ani. So if it comes to giving a get, and the person has to be forced, so how could you accept that as a valid document? It's not valid if he was forced to do it. Ad She'omer Rotze Ani, the neshama really wants it. It's not that he doesn't want it. It's that exactly what the Mechaber is saying. The desire to play, the desire to do bittul zman, the desire to sin, is much stronger than the desire to learn Torah. But really, he has both desires. So kofino, so you can force a person. So Avicha quotes the halacha that on Erev Shabbos, you're allowed to go into the home of a miser who refuses to give tzedakah and take away his possessions. If a wealthy man who's a miser and he refuses to give tzedakah, you're allowed to enter the home on Erev Shabbos and take away his possessions. Today he would probably be arrested by Dinim Bachusa, so it's not such a good idea. But the basin could actually go into his home on Erev Shabbos and take his possessions. How could he do that if he doesn't want to give it? Because Lamaisa, does he want to give it or doesn't he want to give it? He wants to give it. The person wants to give the get. The child wants to learn Torah. What's the problem? There's all these external factors that are telling you to do something else. We want to be better. We don't want to talk Lashon Hara. We want to go to Shir. We want to say Tehillim. We want to improve our midos. It's not that we don't want to. So Kofino, so you force him, Ad She'omer, until the neshama really says, Rotze Ani. Why? The neshama really wants it. We don't want to be bad people doing bad things. We want to be good people doing good things. But all of this external gashmi gets involved and gets in the way. So what does the father do? He knows that there are faint, very faint, positive thoughts in the child that tell the truth. The truth is, rotza ani, I want. But they are pushed to the side, and the father tries to magnify and expose them. Gradually, the two desires become equal. So in other words, if you work on cultivating the inner ratzon for Torah, if you work on cultivating the inner ratzon for mitzvos, the inner ratzon for midos tovos, it can become stronger. As it becomes stronger, the ratzon to play, I'm just using an example, there's nothing wrong with children playing, they should be playing. Anz asked the Shaya actually about that, without going into full detail. Rabbi Shachter said it's very important for children to be children. Children have to play. They have to know, they have to play. They can't always be when they're a child sitting, don't pass anything. You ask your own child for your own family, but the child has to know how to play, how to go play a game, how to go to camp, how to be a child. So I'm just using his example. Don't leave here and say we said that a child should not be playing a game. That's not correct. Did you see Rav Chaim? What was the game they would play with their children since they didn't use electricity on the long Friday nights? So I saw it in a couple of places as well that they would say a mamar chazal or a sefer and the room was dark after the kerosene lamp went out and he would point on the shelf to exactly where the sefer was from the hundreds of thousands of svarim, and that was the game that they would play. So children do have a desire to play and we shouldn't stifle that. I'm using his example. So what happens is as the ratzon for learning, as the desire to increase in Torah rises, what's going to happen is that the desire for play is going to diminish or decrease. It was an inverse relationship, yeah? So therefore, gradually the two desires become... someone's there? Thank you. Oh, it's noisy? Thank you, Joanna. Gradually the two desires become equal, and then the ratzon to learn becomes even stronger than the desire to play, and he agrees to learn. So through cultivating and stoking that small little flame, what happens is the desire to play decreases, the desire to learn Torah increases. First they're going to be equal, but if you keep cultivating it, what's going to happen is one is going to rise and the other is going to fall. So I want to talk about something from last week's parasha, which is the science of a kosher fish and our desire to always be moving forward in life. So the kosher fish has two signs, okay? The kosher fish is ezeh tochlu mikosher b'mayim, this you may eat, I'm in Parsha Shmini Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Tes to be specific, this you may eat from everything that is in the water, kol asher lo snapir v'kaskasas, very famous, everything that has fins and scales, b'mayim, in the seas, b'mayim in the water, b'yamim in the seas, u'banachalim, and in the streams, osam tochelu, this is what you shall eat. V'chol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskasas, anything that does not have fins and scales, b'yamim in the waters, u'banachalim in the seas, u'banachalim in the streams, mikol sharet hamayim, from everything that creeps in the water, mikol nefesh achaya, and from every life form asher b'mayim, shaket seimlochem. So anything that has fins and scales you may eat, and anything that does not have fins and scales you may not eat. And we know that this has, so if you go fishing and you catch a fish that has fins and scales, they're both visible signs, then it's kosher. And if you catch an eel, then it is not kosher. Okay, so what is the difference between fins and scales, and why do we need both? So that's with fins and scales, and why do we need both? So the commentators on the Bali Musar explain as follows. Fins propel the fish forward in the water. Okay, there's obviously going to be a lesson for us as people. Fins propel the fish forward in the water, and scales are like a coat of armor. They protect the fish. So if you think about a knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, armor, the knight's armor that they used to wear, it looked like scales of a fish. That is how it was designed. So the scales are the protection, and the fins help propel the fish forward in the water. Why do you need both? You need both because, one, you have to be protected from the environment around you, but you also need to be not only protected, you could be protected but stagnant. You also have to be, what?
Moving.
Always moving forward in the water. So you always have to try and diminish your ratzon for games and increase your ratzon for Torah learning. And again, substitute whatever your Yetzer Hara and your Yetzer Tov are currently battling. So I was teaching last week at Olami House, Wormir. I teach a small group of Chozro Teshuvah once a week, Parsha. And one of them said something amazing. Catfish. What sign do they have? Do you know? What sign do catfish have of the
fin,
two signs?
Fins. They don't have scales.
Very good. That's exactly right. Catfish have fins, but they don't have scales. I thought that this was an incredible lesson of the truism of Torah, because catfish are bottom feeders and they like clean up the garbage. They dwell on the bottom and they clean up the garbage. So what does it prove to you? Exactly what the Torah is teaching you. You could have, they have fins, catfish. She said that they're smooth fish. They don't have scales. So you could want to move forward in life. That's wonderful. But if you don't have scales to protect you, then you're going to be moving forward. But what's going to happen? You're going to pick up along the way their bottom feeders. You're going to pick up along the way garbage. It's not enough to have the ratzon to move forward. You also need to have the protection from the negative elements in society as you move forward. And that's why, because the Gemara questions why you need both signs. Because the Gemara says that any fish that has scales automatically has fins. So why do we need two signs, fins and scales? Because you see that one is not enough. You could have fins, but if you have fins and not scales, then what's going to happen? You're moving forward, but you could be moved forward in a world full of schmutz. And in fact, the world is full of schmutz. You will be moving forward in a world full of filth. So you need to be constantly moving forward and trying to increase the ratzon for limud ha-Torah. At the same time, protecting yourself, those are your skills, and decreasing, through protection, the desire for things we should not be involved in. And Rachi Fried, who's on the Zoom call, last week shared with me an amazing var, and I'm going to read you her email further about fins and scales. And I thought it was just fabulous. One second. I'm going to find it. And she said something else that was brilliant about fins and scales. Here we go. Further on the idea of scales protecting and fins propelling forward. This idea we should not think it's enough to be in our safe zone religiously, so to speak. We must always be moving forward. We can't be complacent and stagnant. It's very beautiful. But it made me think about the idea that there's a second function. Ready? Fins actually alter the environment as the fish moves. Every movement causes a ripple effect in the water. What is the Musar Haskell for us?
We don't live in a vacuum.
That what?
We don't live in a vacuum.
And therefore?
Everything we do has some kind of an impact.
That's exactly right. We don't live in a vacuum, and everything we do has a ripple effect. Everything we do, everything we say, everything we act, everything we project, everywhere we walk, everywhere we go, has an influence on the environment around us. So we need dual aspects. You need to be protected from the negative influences in society, but you have to recognize that just like a fish has fins, so a scale is for the fish itself. But the fins actually make some movement in the water. It might not be huge, it might not be a tsunami, but they are causing a ripple effect in the water. And that teaches us that as we are moving forward, we too are causing a ripple effect around us. So it's not enough just to be protected, and it's not enough just to be moving forward. You could, like the catfish, be moving forward, but if you're not protected, you're going to be moving forward through the garbage pile. And it's not enough to just be protected, because then you're going to be stagnant. You have to be protected, but also moving forward. And then you have to recognize that as you do one, as you move forward and protect yourself, the desire for Torah will increase, and the desire for games, fill in the blanks, will decrease until they become equal. Until, if you keep on this set pattern, the desire for Torah will ultimately outweigh the desire for games. So those two things I thought were incredible. A catfish, we learned so much from the catfish. You can only have fins because the scales protect you from a negative environment. And if you're not protected, they'll be moving forward in the garbage, which, Rachman al-Atslan, today society has no shortage of schmutz to confuse us and take us off the right path. And furthermore, scales protect yourself, but fins influence the environment and everyone around you. So as we increase our attachment to Torah, really what's going to happen is you're going to find that it will increase the environment around you as well. And the people around you will also have a further, hopefully, attachment to Torah. It comes with changing yourself first. Okay, gradually the two desires become equal. And then very bottom of page 256. And then the ratzon to learn becomes even stronger than the desire to play. And now he agrees to learn. Okay, page top of page 257. The child has two desires, right? To play and to learn. It is possible that he will feel that his main desire is to play. Well, the desire to learn, even though it's based on MS, it's very, very weak. By the way, this isn't true only of a child, okay? No. This is not true only of a child. This is very true of of doubts as well. It takes a strong ratzon to have a commitment to Torah lifestyle. It takes a strong ratzon to have a commitment to actually going to a shir. It takes a strong ratzon to stick with a program of learning. It's very easy to drop off and, you know, you start once and twice. It's very nice. And then you get busy and then you never come back. So the child slash person really has two desires. It's possible he will feel his main desire is to play, while the desire to learn, though based on truth, is weak. It's also possible he will feel his real desire is to learn, while the desire to play will feel like a distraction. So it depends which is stronger, and every individual knows the balance between the Yetzer Tov and their Yetzer Hara. This question may be asked of each of us. Do we identify with the Ratzon for Torah and Mitzvos? Or do we identify with nonsense? And it's a strong question, and every person has to make that own cheshbon nefesh for themselves. What is my true desire? Is my desire to have a life of Torah and a life of mitzvahs? Yes, the Yetzer Hara gets in the way. Yes, there are distractions. Yes, sometimes my fins move me backwards instead of forwards. But what is my main desire in life? What do I think about most of the day? Where is my head most of the day? Where are my thoughts? Where are my tefillos? Or do we identify with nonsense? Except that there is some external force that pushes us to choose good. How do we identify? Who are we? In simple words, is the Yetzer Tov, the good inclination, the I? Would you say that your Yetzer Tov is your I, with the Yetzer Hara trying to take us away from the goodness? Or is your Yetzer Hara your I? Are you essentially evil, with the Yetzer Tov trying to take us out of that state? Every person has to ask themselves who they think they are, and who inside you really are. Am I really a Yetzer Tov with some distraction of the Yetzer Hara, or am I really a Yetzer Hara with some pulls from the Yetzer Tov? This reminded me of a story that I read many, many years ago that I emailed myself. Here we go. I read this in Bina in 2015, November 2015. Okay? I saved it in a document because I found it to be very powerful. What and who is a person, and how do we identify with who we are? This was written by Yael Mermelstein. In Bina, Volume 10, number 456, November 2015, page 18. Yael Mermelstein writes, this past Friday, I'm looking at my email that I sent myself, I copied and pasted from a document. Yael Mermelstein writes, this past Friday, I went to pay a shiva call to my neighbor, and she's also my friend, and she lost her father. Her father was only 64 years old, and his passing had been relatively sudden. I had never met her family. I knew nothing about her father, other than the fact that he produced a wonderful daughter who was my friend and my neighbor. I went to be Menachem Aval. The Shiva house was quite busy. I was looking forward to learning a bit about who the Nifter was, so I leaned forward in my seat, and I asked my friend, so, what did your father do? She looked at me for a moment. What did he do? She said. Yes, I nodded. Well, he woke up every night at 3 a.m., in order to make sure he got to the Kol Yisrael Ma'arvi on time. He had a long list of people that he needed to daven for every day. He didn't want to miss Vasikin at the Kotel either. He would go down every morning, he would light a candle for departed souls, and then he would start with his list of tefillos. Every morning, I asked? Every morning, she said. He never missed a day, other than Shabbos or Yom Tov, when he could not travel. He davened Vasikin on those days too, just it wasn't at the Kotel. For 35 years, he was at the Kotel for nights, rain or shine, sleet or snow, peaceful times, times of unrest. That's what my father did. I couldn't help sharing my amazement with my own family when I came home, Yael Mermelstein writes. I asked her what her father did, I told my family, and this is what she told me, I told my husband and children. Can you imagine such sacrifice? Could you imagine such a person? Wow, my husband said. The funny thing is, he actually ran a shoe store, from what I understand. Yes, said my daughter, her father had a shoe store. Therein lay the irony. My friend's father had passed away young, and he was a working man and a store owner. But when I asked her what he did, she didn't tell me about the shoe store. The shoe store was how he supported his family. But what did he do and who was he? That was an entirely different answer. I can't help thinking about all the men and women in the world who know exactly how to answer this question. And when they're asked, what do? They say, well, I'm an accountant, I'm a nurse, he's a carpenter, I'm a landscape artist, I'm a lawyer, a doctor. People have trouble sometimes looking beyond what they do to see who they really are. The next time somebody asks me what I'll do, I'll probably tell them I'm an author. Maybe I'll mention articles or books that I have written or a project I'm engaged in at the time. But maybe, I will think of something else, something that gets closer to the core of who I am. Perhaps after reading this, you will consider it too. In Megillas Rus, which I know I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but in Megillas Rus, the Pasuk tells us the Ruth, Arpa gave her mother in law a kiss. Arpa Nashka, Arpa gave her a kiss. Virus Davkaba. Rus clung to her. By Dr. Norman Lamb says that there is such a difference between the kissers and the clingers. The kissers kiss the mezuzah but leave what is left inside behind. Do we cling to Yahadus or do we merely give it an external kiss? Arpa became Arpa, and she was so evil, and she gave rise to such rishos because there was no substance that clung with, well, there's many reasons, and there's many ideas, but this is just one, that clung to the reality of the neshama. Rus davkaba, what does it tell us, what does Moshe Rabbeinu tell us in Devarim, v'atem hadveikim ba'al shem elokeichem chayim kuchem hayom. You who cling to God are truly alive today. Cannot be Judaism of externalities when there is nothing inside. The neshama has to have the desire, and we have to stoke the flames of that desire till it becomes greater than the desire for playing games, all the external, and we can't be like the catfish. It's great he's moving forward, but he's moving forward amongst the garbage, so he doesn't have scales to protect himself. And we have to remember that the scales protect us, but the fins influence everyone around us as well. And none of us exist in a vacuum. No one here lives in exactly their own Dalet Amos and has no influence on anybody else. Whoever you are, whatever you do, there's influence, whether it's on your coworkers or your family members or your neighbors or your kehila or your shul or the people you're in touch with online. You have influence on somebody. Your fins move the environment around you. So if we're moving in a certain direction, that means it's going to impact the people around us as well. And if we're moving in a positive way, it's going to impact them positively. If we're moving in a negative way, Rachmana Litzlan, it's going to impact Chas V'Shalom in that way as well. So we only have a Chayis for ourselves, we have a Chayis for others. And a person has to know, in simple words, is the Yetzer Tov the I, or is the Yetzer Hara the I? And what is external? Yeah.
I think there's a story, I don't know the exact details, but Rebetzin Kanievsky once, I think there were some girls that came to her for a bracha or something, and she said something, these girls had thrown out their non-tznias clothing, their pants or whatever it was, and she told them the ramifications at the exact moment that, I don't know, only she could say, I don't know the exact details, but there was a bomb that didn't go off and didn't cause so much destruction because they threw out, they made a sacrifice.
I don't know.
Something of that sort. That
there's an interesting story about not tznias clothing in the Rebbe's and Kadiev's.
But it could be anything that a person does. It doesn't have to be tznias. It could be any sacrifice that a person does, not talking back or not getting angry or whatever it is. It's not just for yourself. It's for the.
It has an impact on everyone around us. There's an interesting story about tznias and Rebbe Tsikhanievsky in the biography, which is that, it's on my kitchen table, I don't have it here, I was using a pair of different shira, that there was once a group of girls who came to her home, and they were not so tsanua, and there were boys in the street who saw, and they started calling out to them, insulting them, embarrassing them, and she became so, so upset, she screamed at the boys for their behavior, for insulting these unsanua woman, and she became very upset and sick, and she had to go lay down. That people were insulted on her turf. People came to her home for brachos, were so insulted by others. So that is a documented story. I never heard that one, but it's certainly true that everything that we do has an impact on all of those around us, and it's something we have to keep in mind. And the next time somebody says, what do you do? It's a big question, and what do? And who are we? This is a fundamental change that occurred to Adam HaRishon through the first sin, to the first person through the first sin. When the Nefesh HaChaim states that the Chet placed the Yetzer Hara within man, when Rav Chaim of Volozhiner tells tells you that the first sin placed the evil inclination within man. He means that before the sin, man was in a perfectly good state, and the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, tried to take him out of it and place him in an evil state. So we are still trying to analyze who really man is, but I think we have shown from many, many sources between last week and this week that man is ultimately, certainly a Yid is ultimately, with the Pintel and Neshama, we are always good. We are truly good at the core. It's all the schmutz that gets in the way. So Be'ezor Hashem, Hashem should help us on this sacred avodah of protecting ourselves from the outside environment and always moving forward with our fins, keeping in mind everything we do is an influence. The shir should be an aliyah and zechira neshama from Miriam Fron, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzhak, Allah HaShalom. And just an important announcement, because there's many more people here, both in person and on Zoom. Next week is the last week before Pesach. There is shir Be'ezor Hashem next week. I think it's April the 6th or something. There is shir next week. And then the week, like 2 days before Pesach, there's no shir, which I don't think anyone expected anyway. And then if Mashiach doesn't come, Be'ezor Hashem, we resume after. So I wish everyone a good Shabbos, a Chodesh Tov, and I will see you next week, Be'ezor Hashem. Thank you so much, everybody. Good Shabbos.